Hi, this is Adam Carolla. I want to thank you for supporting this podcast on the Carolla Digital Network. Everyone here at Carolla Digital is very proud of the shows that we put out every week and are excited about the future of our network. However, a patent troll is threatening that future by suing us. We need to fight back and beat the troll down. If we go down, all the other shows on the other networks you've grown to love are going to go down next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll to donate and find out other ways that you can help beat the patent trolls. Thank you and mahalo. Hey, it's Adam Carolla. Is your computer running slow? Well, my clean PC can clean it up and speed it up today. Now, you might be asking yourself, how did my computer get this way? It's so frustrating, right? I know, I got the same problem. Well, opening up infected email attachments, downloading music and games all slows your computer down over time. Running these programs can cause junk files, internet clutter, processor and hard drive errors, all to build up on your computer. My Clean PC can help. First, go to mycleanpc.com, and in minutes, you can get a free computer diagnosis and find out what's slowing down your computer. Then simply activate My Clean PC software to clean out the junk. And even remove viruses, and MyCleanPC is guaranteed to increase the speed of your computer. With MyCleanPC, there are two easy steps to speed up your computer. First, go to MyCleanPC.com, get a free computer diagnosis, and then simply activate MyCleanPC software to optimize your computer performance. Go to MyCleanPC.com, do it today, and find out what's slowing down your computer. That's MyCleanPC.com.
This is Carolla Digital. Recorded live at Carolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Thank you so much for tuning into the program. Thanks for supporting the program. Thanks for subscribing via the PayPal button. Keeps the lights on over here. Chris Maxipata, he's got to get that butcher's wax in his hair, and that shit ain't free. He's looking good today.
I know. What is that? I noticed that, too.
He's looking like a little...
He's shaved?
A little Ricky. Remember, remember little Ricky?
Yeah, yeah. Is it more hair or less hair he's got? I can't figure that out.
On the head?
It's better hair.
Less hair.
Less
actually, less hair everywhere, yeah.
Less on the face, that's for sure.
It is little Ricky Ricardo is what he looks like.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He had a happy life.
I guess. Is he still around?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-oh.
Desi Arnaz Jr.
When Drew gives that answer, there's some sort of I know something about rehab that I can't share. Yeah. I've seen him a few times. Yeah. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you for supporting us via the Amazon link. Adam and Dr. Drew Show. .com. Long Beach live show, second show added, first show sold out. So, and Treasure Island coming up.
I want to do Treasure Island with you one of these days. I really do.
Okay. Well, come on out.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know who's on, but you can come on out. President Me, if you'd like your book jacket signed, you can just send it in. It's on Amazon and, you know, bookmark and all that. Now, speaking of that, so I had an interesting, I've been thinking a lot, Drew.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
And so I'm just finishing up this Paul Newman documentary, and I just decided to take myself out of it. So it looked... I took myself out of it because I wanted it to be a documentary, like a theatrical documentary. Yeah. And I didn't want the stigma / stink of me on it. And if you think I'm being paranoid, I made a movie that's, certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. It's funny. It's sitting at 80%. With the critics and the top critics, it's the same number. It's an interesting thing. I don't like to talk about myself. But it got Sports Illustrated Best Movie of sports movie, like 07 or something, was turned down by Sundance because the guy said he wasn't a fan. So my name on something is not helping a project, me being in something. And as a matter of fact, I said to Lynette, not only is this thing going to be better with me out of it, physically not in it, The problem with it is it has my name on the front of it. Mm. And then I just paused and I said, it should be brought to you by Jules Dash. And she said, who's Jules Dash? And I said, a made-up character that sounds cool that would make documentaries that could get into Sundance.
You should do that
and
see what happens.
And then she said, but wait a minute. Is Jules Dash a man or a woman? I said, exactly. We don't know, do we?
It's perfect.
That's why it's perfect.
It's diabolical.
I said...
See what happens. Do it.
Listen, first off, I said...
It's a great experiment.
I would love to fucking take this movie out and have it reviewed. One says, brought to you by Adam Carolla, produced by Adam Carolla, directed by Adam Carolla, written by Adam Carolla. And the other will say, a Jules Dash joint. And then we'll see how the reviews pour in on the exact same product.
It's a brilliant idea. And then we'll do a little documentary about that.
Right. So my new new filmmaking name is Jules Dash.
Awesome.
And then people start buzzing. Oh, I've worked with her. I mean, him. I mean, they're awesome. I mean, Jules is a fucking genius.
Jules, this Frenchman from Lebanon.
That's right. A genius. So this is...
Lebanese Parisian.
Spawned by I got the newspaper sent to me. Matt Fondelier asked for the New York Times bestseller list so he can have it and scrapbook it. And then I realized, you know, President Me, this will be the third one in a row on the New York Times bestseller list, not reviewed anywhere.
You know, it's weird. I had the same experience. Both my books didn't do as well as yours, but they're both bestsellers. Briefly, and tried to get the Cracked reviewed by New York Times Book Review. We don't review books written by celebrities.
Well, they do.
I know they do. Of course they do.
In the comedy department, Fondelier will tell us. But I mean, they reviewed a bunch of comedy books, just not mine.
Yeah.
And then I thought, geez, that's queer. Here you go, the third New York Times bestseller in a row, and zero reviews.
Maybe Jules wrote it.
Oh, man. If Jules Dash wrote it.
There'd be a buzz.
Now, then I thought, oh, well, there was one kind of review before it came out that was in Variety or whatever that... Entertainment Weekly. Gary will tell us. I can't remember the Vanity Fair, whatever it was. That was the bullseye of things and not a thing. And they've decided it was not a thing. But before it came out, that was my monitor's not on. Oh, now it's on. But either way, that was Esquire. So there was the one review I'm aware of was the one that came out a week before the book came out. It came out before they read the book. They just made a graph of it was a bullseye. It was things that were a thing, and as you got toward
misses.
The outside,
yeah, I've seen that.
Things that were not. It wasn't even misses. It's just not anything.
Yeah.
This one was as far out. This wasn't on the bulletin board. It would have been on the wall that the bulletin board was hanging on. It was a New York Times bestseller, but it was not a thing to them.
The journalism is sort of running amok.
Journalism.
Or whatever it is, media.
And then I didn't tell you the...
You're right, media, journalism is not the right thing
to call it. I didn't tell you the end of the NPR story. I told you I went in there and busted their chops because they tried to ambush me. Then they lied and said, we're not airing it because we're in the midst of one of our pledge drives, which is...
They have no radio during the pledge drive? Zero?
Well,
They're always in a pledge drive, first of all.
John Waters did his book 3 weeks after mine, and then they aired it that day.
Yeah.
So they're airing authors.
God, if only Jules had written this one.
It'd be nice. They're lying. The thing that's interesting about the folks from NPR, it's interesting that they lie.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, you know, there's a lot of things, there's tenets they have, you know, and one of them is not lying. No. I mean, one of them is about, hey, transparency. You got to be wide open.
And who was it that you were talking to? Could it have been some intern or something just blowing you off? Or
no, it was somebody who was higher up on the bullshit lying scale. The intern couldn't have come up with that. This was somebody who just flat out lied and said, no, we're not. The reason we didn't air his interview on our NPR station I did out in New York is because we're doing a pledge drive, which is, it's called a lie. It's not stretching the truth. And the reason we know it's a lie is because then after a month, more than a month had gone by, and we contacted them again and said, what's up? Like, when are you going to air this thing? They said, well, we're not going to air it. That's how you know the pledge drive's a lie. By the way, isn't there some public funding for these guys?
Mostly.
Mostly public funding, so they just do what they want to do, and if they disagree with you, they don't air their interview. And then their excuse was the interview didn't come out very well.
Well, remind people what went on.
I went in there, and they interviewed me like everyone interviews me, but at a certain point, they did an ambush sort of move where they played a clip from my podcast of Joe Coy doing sort of a stereotypical Asian character and tried to do a gotcha moment. And I said, well, nice try, but that wasn't me. That was Joe Coy talking.
He's an Asian guy.
And he's Asian. And they sort of grunted and said, well, I guess that's better. But their gotcha moment turned out to be a gotcha for them and their shitty journalism. And I basically said, you know, I appreciate the ambush, but it didn't work. Now they have a choice. Do you edit that and air it? Well, no. That's that shows you have no scruples and that you're that's biased journalism and blah, blah, blah. So you can't edit it and air it. Well, now what are your choices? Air it in its entirety and make you guys look like what you are, quite frankly, or don't air it at all. A fucking 25-minute interview that I drove across town to do. Not going to get aired at all. And their excuse was that
didn't go very well.
Well, it didn't go very well, and they didn't prepare. What I said was, oh, fuck yes, you prepared. You prepared a fuck of a lot more than anyone else prepares. No one else plays me clips from my podcast when I do an interview with them. And I've done thousands, not hundreds, thousands of radio interviews. I wish they'd play clips from my podcast. They don't. I do Kevin Bean every fucking Wednesday. They don't play clips from my podcast. I do everybody's show, podcast, radio show, on all different stations up and down the dial, from, you know, crazy FM talk to conservative AM talk. Nobody plays a clip from my show. So I would argue that you prepared all right. You over-prepared.
Culled through hours of documents.
It was not about lack of preparation. No, you prepared to make me look like a racist. And when it backfired, you guys did not have the fortitude or the dignity to air it. So when it looks bad for me, you air it. When it looks bad for you, you don't have the conviction or the courage. I mean, by the way, you're duplicitous. And you're cowards. You talk about truth. You never stop beating that drum. It's all about transparency.
Who was the reporter? You remember?
Until it makes you look bad. And then, not so much. Ooh, we lost the tape. And in this case, he literally just said, we're not airing it. Whose decision is that? Do you just get to say we're not going to air something? You guys are publicly funded. Just not going to air it? Because you didn't like the way it sounded?
Then why don't you say to them, fine, well, let's do it again.
Oh, and they said, let's do it again.
And then bring this all up. Bring this all up at the next interview and see what happens.
I was in the fucking middle of Manhattan doing this thing. I don't know when the next time I'm going to New York. Yes, I could phone
PCC,
it in.
Pasadena does it. You can go to PCC. They have NPR there.
It's not the same show. It's not the same guy.
Yeah.
Look. I don't think they would take me up on it.
Which show was it?
I don't remember the fucking guy's name.
Can you look it up, Gary?
We'll find it. The point is, all right, Matt Brian Lehr. We can... no one's heard of him.
Well, I listen to a lot of NPR. I just wonder what the show is. Hey, can I ask you something? I'm trying to be more Corolla-like in my powers of observation.
Mm-hmm.
The Brian Lehr show. I don't know.
All right.
That I don't listen to.
Well, thanks for asking, dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, no, that means I asked because I thought maybe you could go on one of the more popular shows on NPR that are recorded here. That's all I'm saying.
Call me Jules.
It will go as Jules. There's something different about your coffee today. What is it?
It's got too much milk in it.
Is that what that is?
The ratio.
I literally was like, oh, it looks like a – it's in a different cup. The different color is different. It's filled with different.
I grabbed a different cup, but it looks
like somebody else's coffee. It's not yours. It's the strangest fucking thing.
I oversplashed.
Yeah.
Takes a big man to admit when he's wrong with the milk. And what I'll do is I'll even it out by dumping just some more black in there at some point, thin the herd.
But isn't that funny? That is not your cup, and that wasn't your coffee.
Well,
weird.
First off, everything here is mine.
No,
Chris Pattis' hair is mine.
I understand.
It's all mine. It's here. Hey,
yes, sir.
I own all this shit, bitch.
I understand, but you know what I'm getting at? Isn't that weird how you just – we have habits and stuff? And
yeah.
This struck me like, what's coffee? What the
yeah. Fuck? You should make a TV movie about it.
Maybe you've changed a little bit. Maybe the way you approach
True.
Your mornings.
I grabbed one of my coffee mugs. It's not the one you normally see me bring from home. I grabbed one from my kitchenette, and I put a little too much milk in it.
Well, I think I noticed it because I was thinking about you on the way in this morning. Mm-hmm. Not on the way in. As you entered the building,
mm-hmm.
when you yelled at the smokers outside to empty the ashtray.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow. It must be tough to go through life picking up on every little thing like that and feeling it so deeply.
Well, the first thing I had to do...
It struck me. I was like, oh, whoa. It had energy, too. It was like, I'm one of you smokers. Dump the ashtray.
The first thing I had to do was tell Dawson to quit hawking oyster-esque loogies all over the blacktop in that one area where people walk. It was an interesting... Sort of what I would call a tell, perhaps, because there's a shrub that's 3 feet away that he could hawk his loogies into, but instead he would hawk them in a sort of, like he was marking his territory, like in a circular fashion, a full 4 feet away from the front door. But these were mucousy, slippery loogies on a blacktop that he would just hawk in a sort of a circle around him. Seems weird that you don't get up and just hawk it into the planter, which is very conveniently located next to your throat. But that was the first one. I had to say, stop it. And then at a certain point, I had to say, stop throwing the cigarette butts. Get an ashtray and just put them in the cigarette, the cigarette butts in the ashtray. But then they started overflowing. So, but Gary said, there's a couple of smokers around here, and there's a miniature ashtray. And Gary said it gets emptied every day. And I thought...
So you guys had a whole full conversation about this.
No, I let it go with that. I was fine with that. Although I showed up this morning and it was full. So I don't know who was smoking this morning. But either way, they take care of their own over there. Has Dawson stopped at the circle of loogies?
Yeah, he definitely doesn't go on the blacktop anymore. It goes towards the planter.
Circle of lube.
Toward the planter.
Yeah, he's good. He gets it in the planter.
Okay.
85%+.
Interesting that we needed to have that conversation, though, right?
I remember that conversation. It seemed awkward to me.
Uncomfortable?
It seemed unnecessary.
Yeah.
It was wildly uncomfortable.
Wildly uncomfortable.
More or less uncomfortable than the time I walked in and my pillow had been removed from my sofa.
Less.
And set on the floor so that Brian's dog could have a place to rest. Drew.
Yes.
In the pantheon of blind narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a bad way, but
just out of it narcissism.
In the pantheon.
Yeah.
Hawking loogies all over the blacktop, sort of where people enter the building.
I would say, yes.
Taking a pillow off of the sofa.
Yeah.
Putting it on the floor and putting your dog on top of that pillow.
Yeah.
Or taking the cup that I use for my Sparklets bottle that I set on top that says don't touch on it inverted so I can put it upside down, filling it full of Sparklets water, putting it on the floor of my garage and having your dog drink out of it and then leaving. How would you rank those three. What if your kids ever engaged in one of those activities? Killed by hobo? Like, what would you do?
Yeah.
Hire a hobo to kill them?
Yeah, yeah.
Where does this rank?
Well, you asked about blind narcissism. I mean, it's sort of out of it narcissism.
None of the three individuals I speak of are bad people by any stretch of the imagination.
I get it.
It's just something happened along the way.
Yes.
in their rearing where they decided this was okay,
okay,
because it was them.
Okay.
So that's blind narcissism.
Because there's sort of profound assertive narcissism, like real hardcore, like, hey, man, it's me.
That's
so I'm doing these things. Hang on.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be the do not touch glass. Mm-hmm. As opposed to out of it narcissism, where I sort of excrete body fluids where the fuck I feel like it.
Yeah.
Because I'm just out of it and I don't really realize I'm having body fluids come out of me. Mm-hmm. And hey, man, I'm here and that's where they're going.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I give the oysters the out of it narcissism award.
So you give the glass.
The real bona fide narcissism.
The glass with the dog drinking out of it.
Bona fide.
And then left, by the way, to be discovered by me.
I argue
second
that
the power rankings is Brian taking the pillow, putting on the floor, and putting his dog on top of the pillow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which he stands by.
Yeah,
to some degree.
Well, that's why it's always more awkward with Brian, because Dawson will just go, "No problem, boss."
Yeah, because out of it, and you alerted him to something that he was not aware of. So that's kind of an out of it narcissism, which is what we're ranking here,
right?
But I would argue, by the way, the guy with the do not touch glass, if he'd actually put it back up on top of the thing, on top of the sparkling bottle, capsized again, not having washed it, that would be worse than leaving it.
No, that suggests
that's diabolical. Now
no,
it's like,
well, first off, God knows how many times that did happen, and I didn't know about it. Number one, that's why I don't give a fuck about germs. As my son pointed out to me today, that I was the guy who ate the cashew off the ground that the pigeon spat out at Burbank Airport on the tarmac.
Yeah.
No. That's
Dad setting an example.
Drew taking the glass back off the ground after your mutt drank out of it, maybe wiping it down with your shirt tail or your sleeve and placing it back on top, shows a certain conscientiousness.
Awareness, yeah.
A certain awareness and a certain ability. It is basically the equivalent of this. You work, I would work in people's houses all the time back in the day, right?
Yeah.
I would go into their pantry and give it a light rating.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I would grab that big thing of honey roasted cashews or something and take a look to my right, take a look to my left. The car wasn't in the driveway, and I'd pour myself a nice handful. I would always screw the top back on, fluff it in such a way where I shook it around a little just to get a little air under it, build it up a little. And then I would take the jar, and I would make sure that the label was sort of facing where it was, it was positioned in the pantry, so that the next time the guy opened the pantry, there it was as it was.
So the guy with the glass is sort of out of it narcissism. You're full-on criminal behavior. Full-on.
I would come home to my house, and there would be a big sack of nuts sitting on the island that was just wide open, just gaping open, which meant Ozzy or somebody else who was working my house was eating the nuts. Yeah. And I would just simply say, look, zip it shut and turn it back on. I mean, don't have me open the front door and see from the front door who's gotten into this shit. Then I would pitch a small fit about it. And then the following day, it would be in the exact same position.
You know what would avoid the whole thing with the glass is if your narcissistic buddy had just applied for BarkBox.
He'd get a bowl.
And it happened regularly, monthly, 4 to 6 full-size products. He would have never been without what he needed.
Mm-hmm.
Innovative toys, gadget, bowls, ingredients, single-ingredient treats and more. Get their products from small independent vendors. You will not find this stuff in the stores. 3 monthly plans, each tailored to your dog's size to ensure the right treats and toys are delivered. BarkBox.com/Adam. Toys, hygiene, grooming products sourced from American vendors, every item high quality, tested on their own dogs. And last year, BarkBox donated over $150,000 to shelters, animal welfare organizations. 2014, it's $1 million, baby. They'll donate 10% of all their proceeds to these organizations. Help them out. Visit BarkBox.com/Adam.
Hey, Drewski.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So I was in Phoenix last weekend doing a bunch of shows. I was in San Jose on a Wednesday, and then it was time to leave for Phoenix on a Friday, and I was tired. I was tired of going to the Burbank Airport, and tired of Southwest, and tired of hotel rooms, and frankly, tired of being on my feet, with a mic in my hand.
Yep.
And Barry Katz came on the show, who's a pretty legendary manager. I mean, Dave Chappelle and Dane Cook and Jay Moore. And he's done them all.
Yeah.
And he did this Louis C.K. He did this highfalutin thing with me where, you know, I basically explained to him, look, I'm leaving tomorrow. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. Signings in between. I don't want to go. What? You don't do it, you know, for the love of the sport? You know?
And
I said, no.
Has he ever met you before?
Well, I said to him, first off, what one of your clients does? I mean, honestly, I was doing a fucking show with Jay Miller. I mean, Jay Miller. That's my old assistant. I got Jay Moore and Dennis Miller combined. I was doing a show with Dennis Miller. I said, look, I'll go out and do 35 minutes, and you go out and do 35 minutes, and then we'll both come out and do like 20 minutes together. And he said, you do 30, I'll do 30. Then we'll both come out. And I was like, just shave five. What in my mind? What the fuck's 5 minutes?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's the same thing.
According to my act and his act, it's 5.5 extra jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Times however many dates he does.
Right.
I said, why do you think these guys have openers in middles?
Yeah.
And then they come out. They don't come out and do 95 minutes. They have a guy come out and do 15 minutes. Then they have a guy come out and do 25 minutes. And then they come out and do 55 minutes. That's what openers and middles are for.
Yeah.
That's how these guys roll. Yeah. But then I got a little defensive at first, which is like, you know, and he essentially said, well, I don't know if I was listening right now and I was thinking about buying a ticket, whether I would or not, to your show in Phoenix.
Oh, because you're not showing enthusiasm for it?
First off, I just said, fuck that. Number one, the roofers, pool cleaners, factory workers, and the fucking CEOs at the factory. How much fucking enthusiasm do they need? It's a fucking job.
Just do it right.
I do it right because that's my job, because you paid, bought a ticket because I'm coming back next year and I want you to come back again because I don't want to go home and go on Twitter and find out that the lock sat up there, pulled up a stool and talked about nothing for 90 minutes. We should have fucking spent our money and watched a movie at the theater.
Yeah.
That's what I don't want.
Yeah.
I have an ego. And I also have a sort of moral compass, which is, hey, these fucking people are paying and there's a 2-drink minimum. But no, I don't want to go to the Burbank Airport again. And as I always say to everybody, when I said to the first publisher of my book, at a certain point when we were eating lunch, about halfway into lunch, after I said, you guys, like 13 times, she said, you don't even know the name of our company, do you? I said, no, I don't. She kind of looked at me like, we're getting in business and paying you a bunch of money to write a book, and you don't even know the name of our company? And I was like, no, but that's not going to stop me from writing a good book.
Yeah,
it's not even, for me, it doesn't have anything to do with it. We have successfully taken feelings and fucking infused them into everything.
Mm.
I don't like that. Like, I have to love writing books in order to write a good comedy book. I have to love going to Phoenix and doing two shows on a Friday and two shows on a Saturday in order to deliver a product that's worth people's hard-earned money. It's fucking bullshit.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying for sure. And I would argue that it's sometimes you enjoy doing the shows, right? Sometimes.
No.
No, come on.
No,
sometimes.
Look,
not those shows. Sometimes.
No. Here,
you have enjoyed doing shows in the past. Let's put it that way.
Let me say this.
Yeah.
Once, first off, is one great comedian once said, I'm not paid to perform. I'm paid to travel.
Yeah.
When you're standing on stage, that's not the part they're paying me for. They're paying me to go to the airport, wait in line, go through security, check into the hotel.
You hate that no matter what.
Everybody hates that, right. I'd say. Well, especially when you traveled the weekend before, and then in between those two weekends, you jumped out to Sacramento. Again, no, I don't enjoy being on stage.
At all?
No.
Anymore or
never?
Always? I remember a time.
Yes.
When, as compared to the work you could have been doing,
Of course, it's right. Fucking better than that.
All right. And so as such, there was some appreciation, at least, of the opportunity to make a living doing something that was certainly more enjoyable than the majority of things you could be doing. Yeah?
Listen. Abso-fucking-lutely.
Okay. All right. Hold on. And so I remember times, even last summer, occasionally, there were moments where you had fun doing out on stage.
No,
you were not.
Here's what
fun.
I enjoy. There's a few things.
Yeah.
I first off appreciate being able to do what I do
as compared
for
to anything
living.
Else. That's right. Okay.
That's I do
and so
appreciate
thank God,
it.
And by the way, let's just
fun point, is not really the word.
Hold on. Let's just point out that the majority of people that do this kind of work haven't had other careers. They think this is work. They don't understand how good they've got.
Well, I think they've waited tables and bartended.
I'm just saying, for the most part,
they've not had a career
right.
in construction where they drove a truck and yeah. worked full time,
or medicine like I did, or whatever.
Yeah, worked full time in another industry.
You and I
industry.
Both shared this thing like, whoa, compared to real work, this is like, come on now. Even the travel part, as much of a pain in the ass as it is. Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Right. Right. And there's been times that you've had enjoyment on the stage. You enjoyed engaging with people. You enjoy their reaction to certain things.
I feel satisfaction.
Fine.
From being on stage.
That's fine. Fine. Is it possible, given that those two things are true,
mm-hmm.
that you're just overworking? And
well,
this is really a function of just that.
Well, yeah. I told you I was at an airport the weekend before. I was at an airport on Sunday.
No, I understand.
And
I
then
heard
I was
that.
At an airport on Wednesday.
I heard it.
And then it was back on Friday.
Yes, I heard it, but you couch it in was, and I hate getting on stage, therefore why would I want to do this? It's like, no,
I don't.
Not true.
No, I don't.
You hate it now because you've done too much of it.
No, I don't have. The good news is I don't have feelings about getting on stage, good or bad. I just don't have feelings about it. I don't have that. Everyone wants to infuse that. Well, the rush of the live audience. Don't have that. Never did. But it's satisfying,
mm-hmm.
and it feels satisfying to do what I do.
Yeah, like any good work.
And I'm grateful to the audience.
Yeah.
I'm always grateful to the people who come, yeah. hence me going out and signing in between
yeah.
and taking pictures with yeah. everyone
and
in between
that,
everything.
And I get that about you, but I think when you make a big statement like, this sucks, I don't want to do it kind of thing, people hear something else. They just
no,
hear
it. No, it doesn't. It doesn't
and by
suck.
People, I mean the manager guy. Not, I think your audience kind of understands.
The travel.
Yeah.
The travel sucks. Sweating through your shirt for two shows, a little bit. I'd do one show if I had my druthers.
Go do it.
No, because now you're getting on an airplane, you're checking into a hotel, you're gone over the weekend, you're going there to make money.
All right.
Now you could sell out a second show. What do you want to do? Just go back to the hotel and watch SportsCenter? I mean, it's like you're there. You and I are both that way.
No, I get that.
Once you're there, you're there.
Yeah.
If you're going to be there, do it work.
And let's work. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how the three show night got concocted by the diabolical Mike August.
Uh-oh.
I mean, I'll never do that again, but that was three shows a night, three nights in a row. And that's when I was stupid. I would do 100 minutes a night. I mean, 100 minutes a show times three. Yeah, but it's a good experience. You know what else is a good experience? Boxed.com. You can go to Costco. You can go to Sam's Club. It's frustrating. Long lines. Giant carts. Got the old lady with the cocktail weenies.
Yeah, I can't. Well, that's the only good thing. But I can't stand walking around those places. I can't stand it.
No, I can't. And the cart. It's mainly about the parking. Because you know.
No, it's where it starts is the parking.
It starts with the parking. But here's the thing. When you don't get a good parking spot at the movie theater, you're just going to walk to the movie theater, and when it's done, you're just going to walk back
yeah.
at night.
Yeah.
When you don't get a good parking spot at the Costco, you're going to be pushing a wagon train mm-hmm. filled with a metric ton of cereal mm-hmm. and toilet paper back to – you're going to be muling.
Yeah.
You're going to have a good lean. You're going to be like that dog pulling the Grinch's sled up the hill. on the way back to the Grinch's lair.
You will have one branch on your head, branch, just like the dog.
Duct tape onto your head. That's the point. Now you got Box.com. You do all your shopping. You do it online, man. You get free delivery for shipping over $60. And by the way, I mean, purchases over $60. What isn't? I mean, why bother going there if you're not?
Right. I mean, of course it's going to
spend $61.
They should just say free shipping.
They really should. It's very similar to Costco and Sam's Club. You can save a bunch of time. You save a bunch of money. Use the promo code Adam at checkout. And you get 15% off your first order. So what are we talking about here, people? Save time. Save gas. Save membership fees. Boxed Wholesale. Big Box Club in your pocket. You can go on your mobile device. Visit Boxed.com. Enter the promo code Adam at checkout for 15% off. All right. I'm going to go.
15% off and free shipping. 15%
off and wholesale.
That's insane. All right.
What a time. Yeah. All right. We got letters. We got calls. We all got things. I don't know where the letters are.
I got it. I got one right here. Ah. All right. This one's from Paul. Oh, and if you want to write in, adamanddrdrewshow.com. Check it out at the bottom.
Hey, by the way, somebody, before you read the letter, took issue with me saying Apple hadn't been sued by the patent trolls. Apparently they have been. Mm-hmm. I was saying that, you know, they didn't go after the big companies. They're going after
They're going after the big companies.
They're going after everybody, which is...
No, they're going after the big companies and me.
Fucking insane.
The big companies just settle.
Yeah.
We need a patent.
Ooh, I know. Well,
we need to buy a patent. Let's be like, I think Apple
lost, actually. But either way, here we go.
All right, this is from Paul. Dear Adam and Dr. Drew, I have a 16-month-old daughter, and she favors me over my wife. This upsets my wife because she wants to comfort our daughter, but our daughter wants nothing to do with her whenever she is upset. Recently, she was sick with a high fever, and when my wife tried to hold her, my daughter would shake her head no and refuse to leave my arms. I don't know what to make my daughter want her mother more. It kills my wife that my daughter doesn't want her mom when she's upset. What do I do?
Yeah, kids, especially daughters, they just have an ebb and a flow.
Yes.
And
he'll be in the shitter soon enough. Don't worry. She'll be the identified one. Relax.
Yeah, first off, everybody, whatever the situation is, do not put your fully formed brain into the brain. We're doing too much of that.
Oh, my
God. Into the brain of a kid. We're doing it with pets, too. Yeah. Like, he thinks she's my best friend. He thinks he's a person. He knows me. He knows what I'm thinking. Like, he doesn't. These are walnut-sized brained creatures that have, they see colors and shapes. They don't know what the fuck's going on. No. They don't know whose feelings they're hurting or how they're making you feel and what they're eliciting in you. They don't know anything. And I can tell you right now, by the way, my daughter had a sleepover last night.
Uh-oh.
And it was just me and my wife and Sonny at home. And it was like me and my wife just and an old cat just living alone, like an elderly couple. Like, it was like we're an elderly couple living in a retirement community. Like, my son said,
so quiet.
My son was like, it's so quiet in this house. So I don't have to hear, like, coming down the hall, Sonny! Mommy! Sonny, no! No! Like, I mean, just screaming at Molly, screaming. I had this weird moment with my daughter screams at everybody, you know, and she doesn't have a dimmer switch. And I said I was trying to get Molly to eat. Molly wouldn't eat. And we went through this fucking, made this fucking deal with the devil where she started eating super expensive food. And then wife started mixing in chicken breast with it. And now she won't eat anything. And it's one of those, just buy kibble, get her to eat the kibble. Once she eats the kibble, she's not eating the kibble. Well, then eventually she'll get hungry enough.
Absolutely.
And she will eat the fucking kibble, and we could not have to live and die with the can opener and the half open can in the fridge that I got to see with the gelatinous mess. The problem is she was diabetic and needed the shots. So when she would stare at the kibble and not eat the kibble, Lynette had to leave. She couldn't give her the shot until she ate the kibble, but she wouldn't eat the kibble.
Hmm. What are you doing?
Well, the point is at a certain point, I was like, Molly, eat your food. And Natalia was standing there, and I was sort of doing something, and I said, like, Natalia, get Molly to eat her food. And she went, Molly, eat your food! And it's like, scared the shit out of everybody, including Molly. And we were like, Natalia, relax. She said, "What? You want to? Don't scream at her." Like,
where she got that?
So Lynette's mom was like a fucking macaw in terms of her sound and nuts. And my grandmother was louder and shit, too.
So there's a gene coming through.
Very loud.
Something on the X chromosome.
My grandmother, everybody feared it. My grandmother would walk through the door into the house. Mm. And she would come through the door. I spent a ton of time at my grandparents' house because my parents are fucking losers, and I wanted to eat.
Yeah.
And my grandfather cooked dinner.
Food, yes.
And it was a big deal. So he's making goulash, yeah. And we're going to eat a nice big hot kettle of something that was like savory. The word savory, you know. Oof. I was eating just fucking brown rice patties and blanched peanut butter that was unsalted and shit. Yeah. Like, I was just like, I'd open my fridge and just be like, yuck. Like, there's nothing in this fucking house. And then I'd go to my grandpa, and the savory part, the part where there was beef, and I could smell it, and it was potatoes, and it was coming from the oven, you know, and it was like in a big pot, you know. It smelled good. It was fill up the house, you know. My grandmother, she worked at the VA. She had one of those government gigs that, you know, it started at 9, it ended at 5:30. She was never there at 5:32. There was never a weekend.
Yeah.
There was, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks paid vacation. It was a government gig. She never worked. I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but I mean, her schedule was like kaboom.
Rigid.
My schedule's like, where the fuck is he? When's he coming home? Yeah. Is he out of town? Is he going to be around this weekend? Is he coming home tonight? Hers was out the door 8:15. In the door, 6:37, and that was that, with never Saturday, never out of town, and never anything. But when she walked through that fucking door at 6:37, food better have been on the fucking table.
Honey, I'm home.
I mean, honey, I'm home. Yeah. And if Grandpa wasn't walking the food from the kitchen to the table, she was pissed, because she came home ready to eat. And not only that, she didn't like going to the VA every morning.
No wonder you're so steeped in traditional roles. I mean, you were infected by a family where, you know, the dad worked, the mom stayed at home, and there was
Grandpa.
It was the exact opposite.
No, I mean, that's the whole thing. She walked through the door, she was ready to fucking eat, and it was under goddamn stood that the guy who was not working, the guy who was not getting out of bed and going into the carpool and sitting on the 405 traffic and fucking dealing with all the shit that Grandma did not want to deal with when she was 66 years old, that guy, he had a job. Fucking kettle on the table waiting when Grandma walked through the door.
Mm-hmm.
He knew it. She knew it. And by the way, everyone around them knew it.
It was fine.
Yeah, it's fine, except for if you swap the genders, now you're a fucking animal.
Oh, yeah.
If you even suggest that. I always say, take the genders and swap them. We know a lot of guys. We know a lot of guys who have sort of kept wives-ish. You know, they might have kids, but they got nannies. There's gardeners, there's pool, there's maids, there's people in their lives taking care of them. And they don't work. You take that scenario and flip-flop it, make it the dude, it'd be fucking hell raining down on them. It'd be, dude, what do you need a maid for? You're fucking home all day. Your wife goes off. She's gone all day. She's working every weekend. She's working nights, and you fucking got a maid? Sorry, brother. That's embarrassing. You got a nanny? You pick your kids up from school. You don't. If you swap that, that guy would be a fucking pariah. A fucking pariah. Everyone would look down their nose at them, and everyone would be passing judgment on that guy. He'd be a fucking barnacle. Swap the genders back, everyone takes the woman's side. I'm the guy looking for equality here, baby. All of a sudden, I'm a misogynist. Who's the misogynist? I'm just looking for an equal day. My grandfather did not work, but he had a job. And that job was not to supervise the maid. That wasn't his fucking job. He was the maid. He cleaned the house. He fixed the sprinklers when the head broke off. He went to the supermarket, and he made dinner. And that was the trade-off. And guess what? He had a better deal because he didn't go to that shitty VA every day and sit in traffic on the fucking 405 all day and carpool with some dickhead who was into country music and drove a Chevy Love pickup truck with a camper shell.
If only had GoToMeeting in those days.
Oh,
if they'd had GoToMeeting, she could have done it all from home.
Man.
That's right. Put her team together from any location for any business. If you need to brainstorm, collaborate. But getting everyone in the same room is impossible. Like Adam said, you sit in the 405 freeway to get everyone together. That's even if they're in the same town.
It.
But with GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, simple way to meet online anywhere, anytime. You can share the screen, work on documents, one another's documents in real time, turn on webcams to see each other face-to-face. HD, try it free. 3 days, visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code Adam. GoToMeeting.com, promo code Adam. Meeting is believing.
She would walk through that door, and she would make a sound when she came through that door.
What was the sound?
She, yeah, like a horse. She'd go like, "You, Lottie, I'm home." And I could hear him like panicking.
"Hail, honey, I'm home."
Yeah. I could hear him scurry with fear in his voice. Like he'd go, "Yes, darling." He called her darling. "Yes, darling." Now, if she said, "Yoo-hoo," or "woohoo, I'm home," which kind of was his signal, meant start moving the kettle into the dining room. If he did not fucking respond with a "yes, darling" in the first minute and 3/10 of a second, the next one was a fucking megaphone bellow.
So this is why you insist on pushing women down, because you're compensating for the abuse your grandfather lived through. So you see, you're compensating for that, right? Isn't that what's happening here?
Pushing women down?
I mean, you're misogynistic because you're angry at your grandmother for keeping your grandfather under such shackle. No? Or you didn't think anything about it?
I didn't think anything about it. She went to work. He cooked the meals. Or it would be, to me, I mean, just as a young person, it was a pretty simple equation. He got to stay home all day. She brought home all the money, so it was kind of his.
To be fair, you probably were jealous of your grandfather's position. You probably envied it.
Well, my grandmother was miserable.
Yeah.
My grandfather was not miserable.
No, I mean, you probably were like, how can I get a gig like that?
But there sure as fuck wasn't an element of her coming through the door and him watching TV when she walked through the door, and then her going, "Where's dinner?" and him looking up going, "I don't know, what do you want to do? Indian, Thai, sushi?" That element did not exist. And I'll tell you the element that really didn't exist. "Sweetie, on your way home from work, why don't you pick up some sushi so we can eat?" That was unheard of.
What would she have done?
What would she have done?
Yeah. If your grandfather asked for that.
I can't even fathom if he had told her to stop at the market and pick up some food, you know, for him to cook.
Yeah.
Like just even on a Saturday, like, "All right, it's Saturday. Now go to the market, get me a week's worth of groceries. You're not working, it's Saturday. Go to the market." No, the market, he would spend her money at the market. That's the money she earned during the week. But she was the one who was going to the market. It was pretty simple. The country was sort of founded on it. It's a little bit of a barter system. It's kind of understood, right? Used to be understood. Not so much anymore. Okay. I'm just saying. And can I say this? It was good for my grandfather. It was good for him. He lived till 94. It was good for him at age 73. He was probably a few years older than her. He'd get on his three-wheel bicycle. And it had the basket in the back. And he would ride it to the supermarket on an almost daily basis and shop for dinner. And while he was there, he would take a load of laundry to the coin-op laundry place and drop it off at the coin-op laundry place. And on the way back, he'd probably stop by the hardware store and pick up a little fitting for the sprinkler that he was working on. He was busy all day, every day, taking care of her and the house they lived in. And I think it kept him youthful. He certainly wasn't, you know, chilling and watching TV.
Separate from the point you're trying to make, arguably a simple life like that is extremely healthy.
Oh, yeah.
So
no, it's not. We're not doing anyone any favors when we go, hey, don't move. Hey, you don't have to do anything. Hey, don't get up out of bed.
You know, it's funny. My son was doing some field. He's like an intern at a production company doing some field work. And he was collecting people off the street. And he got one guy and he goes, hey, what's your job? And he goes, getting money from the government.
Yeah.
That's my job.
It doesn't help why we think we're helping. If I told Max Zapata, go home, you'll get whatever we pay you. You can't leave. I mean, you can leave the house, but you can take no other jobs or we'll stop paying you. I would go into his apartment, which would be filthy, 6 weeks from now and find a guy had 30 pounds extra weight on him. Beating off. That's what I would find if I sent him home.
To be fair, you'd find
wouldn't
that
take
anyway.
6 weeks.
Yeah, would you? Well, you'd go to this afternoon.
Yeah. I put on 30 pounds in 4 hours. He'd be masturbating feverishly.
Well, maybe not the way.
That's what I would find. Are we helping? Why are we helping? And then whenever I suggest, no, let them work for their keep, everyone goes, huh? Why are you such a dick? It's like, it's not being a dick. It's what we need. It's like saying to a kid, oh, you shouldn't have to do any. Look, if you excel in certain topics like English, that's fine. If you're no good in math, you shouldn't have to do any homework or crack a book. And I say, yeah, you need to double down on that topic. Huh? Why are you such an insensitive prick? Well, because I'd like the kid to get better at math. For him or her. Didn't we? When did we lose that one, Drew?
Well, I noticed. I was thinking about this that we need to be inspired again, in a weird way.
That's why I wrote the book.
Yeah, it didn't work.
I know.
And we need to inspire people to like everybody. Let's get going. Let's get going, everybody. Come on now, everybody.
We'll get going for you.
Yeah, yeah. Not for me.
No, listen. I got to tell you, Lynette has started a business. Like from home, I've never seen her more engaged, more involved, happier, dutiful, like a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
You know, people, stop saying happy. Happy is fucking sitting in a jacuzzi tub.
Yeah, no.
Engaged.
You're absolutely right. No, we've lost the sense of a good life.
Somehow
we're just all supposed to be happy, like euphoric, like everything's pleasant all the time. No. A good life. Lead a good life. And a good life is a contributing life.
I agree. You sound like Colin Quinn when you say contributing life, like your face contorts. Listen, I don't want to sound like a dick.
Oh, no. You would never.
I would never sound like a dick. But people say to me all the time, you know, they go, oh, hey, you're making that documentary. You're making that independent film. You're doing that catch a contract. Oh, that sounds like fun. Are you having fun on that contractor thing? That sounds like a lot of fun. I go, no, it's not fun. It's satisfying. It feels good to provide and get compensated. It's nice that that I've been able to make a career doing this. And it transcends fun. It's not fun because it's work. You have to get up early. You have to travel long distances. Just a lot of standing around and stuff. But it's satisfying.
Yeah.
And let's stop asking
it's
if
nourishing.
Everyone. Yeah. When did this thing though? I mean, when did we start asking everyone if they're having fucking fun?
Yeah.
It's a big deal now. That sounds like fun, Chris. You're making a documentary about patent trolls. That sounds like fun. You having fun? Hey, by the way, when it stops being fun. That's when you got to quit.
Well, we got this idea that work should be play. Play and work should be the same. And it's nice when it can be, but it doesn't need to be.
No, we're working right now. And it's a fuck of a lot better than what you and I are used to doing. You're taking stool samples. Me, it's, you know, putting baseboard down in somebody's house. Yes. But we have to be here at a certain time.
Sometimes that's fun. You know what I mean? The stool sample and everything. You know what I mean? But mostly it's satisfying.
It's satisfying.
Gratifying.
It's gratifying. It's satisfying. All right. Let's talk to Nick. So as far as the daughter goes, they're going to go through a million and one different phases.
Don't even
pay attention to it.
And the wife is the one that needs to be adjusted, not the daughter.
Yes. Nick, 22, Milwaukee.
What's up, Adam and Drew?
What's going on, man?
So I'm going to Sicily in Italy tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We're staying in this real tiny town, and I don't speak a lick of Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm also trying to maybe get lucky on this trip. I'm wondering if you got any advice for me.
Who's going?
Actually, a bunch of my family, but there's a whole group of us cousins. We're all young, so you know we're gonna be partying and whatnot.
Why aren't you learning like some Italian? And forgive me for being so presumptuous, but what about learning? You're going to stay how long?
10 days.
Oh, 10 days.
Yeah, right. Fuck it.
Yeah.
I feel like most of the people who have to deal with the public, bartenders, waiters, whores,
we'll speak English.
We'll speak enough English for you guys to.
But he wants to hook up with somebody. You're not going to hook up with an Italian. Stop it. You're not going to hook up with an Italian girl. 10 days. It's not going to happen.
But you can have fun. You can get lucky. You can speak the language of love. Can you make that circle with your one hand and take your index finger and push it through the other one sort of feverishly? I think that's universally understood. That's not just American.
How about the one where you make the V and put your
make the V and put your tongue through it first? That's the first one you do.
Okay, I'll try that. I'll try that one.
Yeah. Either way, have fun. Have an experience. How many all told from your family are going?
How many old folks?
How many all told? How many? How large is the group?
There's 9 of us.
9.
Find some Americans. Find
Americans.
Imagine
you're going to Italy with 9 family members when you're 22?
No.
Sounds
22.
Sounds absurd, doesn't it?
Yes.
I couldn't imagine going to San Diego with like my dad. Going to Italy. I'm so jealous of everyone's family. I'll tell you, I wish someone would when I was young, I wish someone would have stolen my identity and just ran away with it.
What would have happened?
Just hidden.
Think.
I could have never gotten
it back.
Disappeared. Would have been awesome. They'd have a horrible FICO score. Now you need LifeLock Ultimate. That's right. I have it. Drew has it. You have to have it. It's basically the cost of doing business in 2014. Look, you're online. You're buying things. Your information is out there. The bad guys are going to find it. They're all some blimp hanger in Russia right now trying to with a picture of you. And they're trying to get your stuff.
I had to ring in from Jakarta on my Google stuff and try to get in. Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah.
By the way, you think police are going to stop this?
No.
We discussed this. They're not coming to your house when a drunk driver pulls into your living room. Forget about this. I'd love just to call up the Glendale PD and go, hey, I think my identity was stolen, so could you guys kind of hop to it? They'd probably start cursing at you.
I called the cops this morning.
You did?
Finish your ad. I'll tell you why.
Wow. All right. Anyway, they're coming after you, and you got to protect yourself with LifeLock Ultimate. Drew.
Don't need to change your life. You just need to help protect yourself with LifeLock Ultimate. Visit LifeLock.com. Enter the promo code Drew, D-R-E-W. No longer Adam on this one. It's Drew to save 10% on your LifeLock Ultimate membership. That is promo code Drew at LifeLock.com to get our special 10% discount. Network does not cover all transactions. I was driving on the 134 between that long stretch before the 2.
Yeah, we're talking between Pasadena, California, and Glendale, California.
Yeah, you're sort of over Eagle Rock as you go along the hillside. Yeah, and I smelled natural gas like I couldn't – overwhelmed me. It like hurt my throat. I had trouble breathing for about a quarter mile.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I got to report this, right? I mean, it's something. There were no trucks around. There was no tankers around or something. I thought, this is fucking crazy. I mean, I've smelled natural gas leaks before in the home. And it's like, you know, you kind of, it's that egg. This was like, God, my throat is on fire. For a quarter mile, I was rolling windows up and down trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And I called the fire department. You know, I called 911. They put me through the fire department. They went out there to check it out. I don't know what happened. But isn't that interesting?
Scintillating.
Yeah, fascinating, huh?
Yeah.
My question to you,
though. Did they say anything?
They said thanks. I said, look, I'm sorry. I don't mean to create more work for you. But, you know, I feel like I have to report this. This was really striking.
They just said thanks?
And I couldn't believe other people weren't calling. That was sort of interesting. But my question is, should I have called? Or just let it ride?
Here's my problem. I'm sort of like, sort of like a black youth living in the inner city when it comes to the cops and 911. Like, I've just been kind of trained, take care of your own business, don't call the cops.
Yeah.
I've never really had any.
I don't want to bother them and put them into more work. On the other hand,
my wife's had some pretty good experiences with the fire department. Because she's called the fire department a few times, and they've been really good.
For what?
She's called them when we've had, like, rattlesnakes.
You guys live in rattlesnake territory.
You make the face. You forget about Molly.
No.
You got eaten by a rattlesnake.
She what?
She got fucking taken out by a rattlesnake.
Oh, is that right? In the old house, right?
Yeah. Big time, though. Yeah. I mean, it's like two big puncture marks right on her fucking snout. Like, she was going to die in another 10 minutes. Yeah. Like, my wife did not want the rattlesnakes around. She called the fucking fire department. They come in and cut their heads off.
Yeah.
But either way, cops, not so much. Fire department, yes. I just never call any of those guys. I told him my neighbor's house was on fire. I didn't call them. I mean, that's because he was an old dude.
You wanted the house to burn down, to be fair. I mean,
well,
you didn't want it to burn down. You just didn't want to come to his aid because he'd been such a pain in the ass to you.
Listen, everybody, I'm an atheist, and whatever relationship we're having, you will create it, good or bad. That'll be our relationship. So if you would like to create an adversarial relationship, that's fine. But I'm an atheist who doesn't really give a shit. So if you want to be a colossal douchebag to me for a number of years, and I think your house is on fire, I'm not going to set your house on fire. I'm not going to ask somebody to set your house on fire. But if I see your house is on fire, I'm not picking up the phone. That sounds very harsh. But perhaps something you should have factored in when you're being a colossal ass prick to me for the first 5 years of our relationship. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do.
Okay. Now, what's that make me, Drew? Sociopath?
Rough, tough, practical, pragmatic.
Don't be a colossal douche. Don't call Department of Building and Safety on me over our hedge. And don't check unsanitary living conditions when you do. Or, let me explain something. You have neighbors, everybody. You'd like your neighbors to call the fire department if your house is on fire. You'd like your neighbors to grab your dog if it gets out of the lot. You'd like to be able to ask your neighbors if you're going on vacation, hey, could you collect my mail? Or maybe their young daughter could babysit for you or something, many things. But if you're going to go on the attack with your neighbors, and then your neighbors say sensible things like, well, next time you want the hedge cut between our two homes, which, by the way, my gardener, needs to go onto your property to cut the hedge. It cannot be done from my property. But either way, you've decided that's my job. Feel free to tell my gardener instead of calling the Department of Building and Safety and arranging a hearing. Which, by the way, I never attended. The great thing about our city is that they're so inept that even when there's hearings arranged, you just don't have to show up and nothing ever happens because they're so inept and fucking far behind and fucked up that there's nothing they can do. But this guy arranged a hearing for me to go downtown and discuss a hedge. Point is when your house is on fire some years later, don't expect me at 10 o'clock to pick up the phone. I'm not. Not at all. I like it. Not going to start it. Sure as fuck can't call the fire department.
Think Jules Dash would do the same thing?
Jules Dash is a hero. All right. Thank you for being so supportive. thank you for getting President Me and getting it on Amazon. And you can send it in. It'll sign it. Also, completely separate, not Taco Bell material. I have 3,000 of these books sitting here. For $10, I'll sign it. You can have it. And that includes shipping. So it's basically a push for me. I just got 3,000 of these things to get out of here. So, well, and you know how we do it? We do it a book at a time. So go to our P.O. Box, go to AdamCarolla.com, find it. And again, for $10, you get a signed hardcover. And until next time, Adam Carolla, for Dr. Drew, Chris Max Pata, Gary Hafter, saying mahalo.
This is Carolla Digital.